All right, so for our next talk, it'll be Randy Easter. He began his career at IBM in Poughkeepsie, New York, and there will be a quiz as to where exactly that is. As a senior hardware engineer at IBM, he was hardware design engineer for the S390 processor development and lead hardware design engineer for the S390 vector coprocessor and cryptographic coprocessors. As lead senior design engineer for cryptographic hardware development, he designed and developed the first FIPS 140-1 validated level 4 single chip cryptographic coprocessor, certificate number 40. So that was before most of you were born. After joining NIST in 2000, Randy held the position of the director of the NIST cryptographic module validation program for 11 years from 2003 to 2014, where I had the pleasure of working with him and poking fun at him as often as possible, for which I'm sure I'm going to pay during his talk that he's going to give to us. Currently, Randy is the technical expert and principal editor or co-editor of 7 ISO draft standards. He is the editor of 5 published ISO standards and 1 published tech specification, including ISO 19790, security requirements for cryptographic modules. He's going to be speaking to us today on side channel testing requirements in ISO 19790. So please join me in welcoming Randy.
Good morning. I just discovered this morning that I have 25 minutes. I thought I had 50 minutes. So there's going to be more slides in the presentation than I'll be able to go over, but you'll have access to those later to dig more down into details of what the standards will go over that addresses side channel testing. And so I'll focus more on the rationale and the approaches that have been adopted that are driving the development of those standards for side channel testing. And just one note, the previous discussion with Common Criterion 15408, 15408 and 19790 are developed in the exact same working group in SC27 with the same international technical experts. So hopefully once NIST adopts that, they'll get more harmonization between those two approaches, between 15408 and 19790. So a little bit of what I'm going to go over is a little bit of the history, 19790 as far as the requirements that addresses non-invasive security, and then the 3 standards that are specifically addressing non-invasive requirements and testing and calibration. So if we first look at FIPS 140-2, which was published in 2001, there is a clause in section 4.11, mitigation of other attacks, that is a catch-all clause that if a module is claiming or has been engineered for an attack that's not specifically addressed in the standard, then the module security policy shall specify the security mechanisms employed. So since 2001, if a module was engineered to mitigate against side channel attacks, that would have to be addressed in the security policy as far as what the vendor is claiming. However, there is no test requirements for anything that is claimed in under mitigation of other attacks. So in a sense, side channel could have been addressed in that manner since 2001. In 2005, we had the Federal Register notice for the revision of 140-2. And one of the things that we wanted to look at with the revision standard is the side channel or non-invasive attacks. And these are attacks that can be performed on a module without direct physical contact with any of the components within the cryptographic boundary. And an attack such that it does not alter or change the state of the module, but the attempts are to compromise the module by acquiring knowledge of the module CSPs. So this is different than the physical security where you're actually attacking the module, cutting holes, prying the covers off, and things like that. This is we call non-invasive, which now is focused on the side channel types testing. And may in the future may cover other non-invasive techniques as they emerge. But it's essentially non-invasive. The module does not know it's being attacked. So we had a workshop, a physical security workshop in 2005, and a lot of that workshop was focused on the emergence of the practicality of performing these side channel attacks and being able to gain knowledge of the CSPs or cryptographic keys that are utilized within the module. We've also had extensive collaboration between NIST and AIST in Japan to develop non-invasive test metrics and methods. And we had a guest researcher at NIST in 2008 to work specifically on this topic. From this work, we came up with our goal, which was the FIPS 140 or the CNVP program is a conformance testing program. And typically, non-invasive testing is an evaluation. And there's a number of private companies who work in that area. The goal was, how could we develop a conformance test that has value to determining that the mitigation techniques employed by the module are actually protecting against these types of attacks, and also such that the testing cost and time and effort is reasonable through the validation activities and testing activities to the 19790 standard, which i.e. revision of FIPS 140-2. We came up with some ideas on that. We presented that to the Cryptographic Hardware Embedded Systems Conference in 2011, and our initial response was skepticism, that there was no way you could do this. But through discussion at the conference, we were successful in getting ideas across, and some of the companies who are in this business went back and went down this path and determined that it makes sense, and actually it's very useful. And they have now employed this themselves in these private entities that are in the business of doing side channel testing, if contracted. So in 19790, 2012 edition, we created a new section, section 7.8, specifically to address non-invasive security. And essentially it says that a module, if a module is engineered, I think that's the next slide, if the module is engineered to mitigate attacks, then this section is mandatory. If the module is not engineered to mitigate against non-invasive attacks, this section is not applicable. Because we understand that there's many cases where modules, based on the environment they're used in, because they're used in secure environments, locked facilities, guarded environments, would not have to protect themselves since these types of attacks, and therefore not required to go through engineering development or testing for protected against these types of attacks. We also know that in the side channel area, the methods for attacking and gaining information is changing, evolving. It is, in a sense, algorithm specific, depending on as far as how you would approach the gathering of data and getting at determining the keys that are used. So rather than put the requirements in the standard, we point to Annex F that will be where the pass-fail test metrics will reside, so we can update that independently. And also there will be two additional documents we'll go over quickly that talks about how to set up the test setup and do calibration such that you should get the same, a vendor, regardless of what lab they go to, should get the same results. So in 19790, it basically says at securities levels 1 and 2, again, if the module is engineered to mitigate against these types of attacks, this section is applicable. At levels 1 and 2, it is really largely equivalent to the mitigation of other attacks that currently exist in 140-2. They shall document and include evidence and effectiveness of the of how they mitigate against that attack. At level 3 and level 4, actual testing will come into play if the vendor wishes to claim level 3 or level 4. And in this case, testing will occur at the accredited testing laboratory. If that laboratory chooses to adopt that scope of testing under the accreditation body, just like level 4 testing is an optional scope that a laboratory may employ, we believe this would also be an optional scope that a laboratory may want to participate in due to the, you would need staff that has the expertise and tools to do this, so there is an investment to do this. So essentially at security level 3, it simply says you have to meet the security level 3 pass-fail metrics found in Annex F, or the document referenced in Annex F, and the same with level 4. So it's very generic language. That way, we can change things in that space without changing the base standard, 19790. So again, just this visually, level 1 and 2, all levels, documentation required. And as far as testing, at level 3, it's required. I call that strong testing. And level 4, stronger testing. So currently right now in Annex F of 19790, the published version in 2012, or the corrected version from last December, there's nothing in Annex F because we're still working on these documents. They're not published yet. And we really need the suite of those set of documents before you can go down this path. So we have 19790, 24759, and just in January, 17825 has been published. This document is the one that will set the pass-fail metrics by algorithm for both levels 3 and level 4. That is now a published document and available. Underneath that, we have 285 parts 1 and part 2. Part 1 is basically how to set up the test tools and techniques for this type of testing. You know, you need oscilloscopes, you need applications to gather the data that you're getting either from power analysis or electromagnetic probing, how to do that. And do it in a way that different laboratories may procure different devices, you know, different oscilloscopes, different brands of oscilloscopes, different tools. So that we're not forcing a specific tool or a specific solution. However, we do want whatever is used, again, if regardless of which lab a vendor goes to, the testing results should be the same. And that's what part two addresses, is calibration. How will these tools be calibrated in a manner that may have different underlying brands of oscilloscopes or probes or whatever? How do you calibrate that so that you will get the same results regardless of what vendor you go to? So that's what that part two addresses, is calibration of the tools. Both these two documents are still in working draft development. They're moving to, I think, third working draft right now. The next draft will be available for the experts review starting in July, and will be addressed at the next ISO meeting this fall. So 17825 again specifies the test metrics for both level 3 and 4. And the goal here has been to do an efficient push-button approach. The tests are technically sound, repeatable, and have moderate costs. And they're focused currently on power consumption, electromagnetic emissions, and computation time. The number of possible side channel attacks may increase in the future, which is why we made this a separate document, such as photonic emissions, acoustic emanations, et cetera, as attackers get more clever on different devices. The non-invasive attacks are really specific to, they're different depending on the algorithm. Each algorithm uses keys differently and mathematically are using those differently. So on some algorithms, attacks such as simple power analysis or differential power analysis or timing analysis may be applicable, in some cases not applicable. So we've gone through, the first edition has gone through, this is just a snapshot of some of the algorithms that are addressed in 17825. And just given here as an example, such as AES, applicable to both SPA, DPA, or timing attacks. And therefore, the side channel testing will address how a module mitigates against those attacks, such as if a hashing mechanism is only susceptible to a simple power analysis attack and it's not applicable to DPA or timing analysis. So there's a whole chart in the standard based on symmetric key, asymmetric key, hashing, random number generators, random bit generators, and others, and which attacks we determine through the national body experts are applicable or not applicable. And therefore, the test strategy on this, again, is a simple push-button approach. And if you step back and really look at it, what you're measuring or gathering is noise, either noise on the power line or noise electromagnetically emitted by the module. The premise here is that the more noise that's being generated, the more likely you'll be able to sift through that noise and find interesting information such as bits of keys. So the strategy for the conformance testing was really somewhat similar to FIPS 140-2 level 4 physical testing, where you can do anything you want, drilling holes and trying to get inside the module. And if you get inside the module with a practical way that could compromise and get access to keys, you fail. It does not address actually getting the keys, just the fact you can make a hole that's big enough, that is practical to insert probes to get keys, causes you to failure. There's been, I think yesterday, Steve Weingart mentioned that these meshes they have will deter attacks down to probes that are 50 microns. 50 micron, so if I make a 45 micron hole, maybe I can get through that mesh, but is that really useful? So there is typically a cutoff of, yes, I can maybe get these really small holes and compromise without setting off tamper, but it also has to be useful. And the same strategy here is here with the side channel testing. A module is emitting noise, either through the power line or electromagnetic. And the premise is the more noise that is being generated, the more likely that noise may be useful to sieve through to get keys. So the strategy is really looking at a pass-fail of how much noise is acceptable and how much noise is too much and you fail. And trying to set that bar appropriately so that you don't inadvertently fail good modules or you don't inadvertently pass bad modules. So a lot of effort was made to understand for each of these algorithms what that pass-fail metric is. If you pass, there will be noise being emanated, but sufficiently small amount of noise that is deemed would be very difficult to provide any information that could be probably used. If you fail, it appears there's too much noise. Now, there could be cases where it's too much noise, but none of that's key noise, so it would be no value. But you fail because it's just simply too much noise. And if you're claiming mitigation of these attacks, you need to cut down on how much noise that is being emanated by the module. We also address timing attacks. And this testing approach uses statistical hypothesis testing to determine the likelihood that biases are present. And again, the standard provides a leakage threshold in terms of the statistical significance of whether the module will fail or not fail. At level 3, as an example for differential power analysis, the standard says, well, for level 3, there should be no more than 6 hours for each elementary test. When the limit is reached, you terminate testing, and the total sequence of acquisition time should be no more than 72 hours. You should collect up to 10,000 waveforms of one type of side channel leakage for each CSP in the set of CSPs, determine the calibration leakage, and every DPA variant attack specified will be applied for pass-fail. Level 4 is simply, instead of 10,000, 100,000 waveforms, instead of 6 hours, 24 hours, instead of 10 hours, 280 hours. You get more data, and then you sieve through that data as far as pass-fail. 285 part one, again, is test tools and techniques. It focuses on the measurement tools themselves that will be used to collect the emanations, and also focuses on the analysis tool that will go through and sieve through the information and determine what can be found or not. And here's just a high-level example: the analysis tool, the measurement tool, and the IUT that's under test. Part two is calibration. Again, as I said, we want to calibrate that regardless of the devices used, we get the same results. It's implemented using basically two elements, what I call an artifact that has a known footprint or design, and we use that as a calibration tool to calibrate the devices, so that tool developers may develop their own tools, and we can do a uniformly adjusted calibration so that you'll get the same results to the test pass-fail metrics in 17.825. So the artifact will address side channel analysis, the countermeasures, and have properties such as signal-to-noise ratio properties, et cetera. So the overall goal of these three standards, starting with 19790, which says if the module is engineered to mitigate against side channel attacks, and you wish to claim level 3 and 4, testing will be required. We want test methods that are repeatable, precise, automated, so they're not subjective, and low cost. That was the goal. As I said, we have also worked with folks such as CRI, RISC-U, which are companies that have been in this space, with experts in Japan, some of our laboratories as well, and with our acceptance through the CHES program, which has academia from around the world focused on the latest side channel attacks. And with the implementations that have already been implemented have found to be extremely useful using this approach. So with that, any questions?
Yeah, we've got time for one question. Please step up to the microphone if you have one.
Are the public key algorithms not covered by the standard yet? So RSA, ECDSA, things like that?
No, they're also covered. The little example I gave in the slide was just a subset of ones that I pulled out. Okay. What's currently covered is RSA, DSA, elliptic curve, RBGs, keyed hashes, symmetric key algorithms. The goal is that all the approved algorithms that use keying material should be addressed. But for some algorithms, the techniques for doing this have not settled enough yet to be incorporated into the standard. Again, that's why we made it separate, so it can evolve as techniques evolve and as algorithms emerge.
Okay, so but this table that you showed was only
only a subset table of what's in the standard. It's a catch-22 here. I think as the prior presentation, these ISO standards are copyrighted standards. You have to pay for them once they're published. As editor of the document, I'm showing you excerpts of that. Don't copy it too much, and that's why. You know, there's information here, but you know, examples rather than the complete text.
All right, thank you, Randy. And as he said, his slides will be available in the package. If you look at page 7, I believe it's of the conference program, how you can get them after the conference. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Randy. should be Control L.